All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the timingresearch.com Analyze Your Trade, episode number 108 for January 7th, 2020. My name is David Cosmeter. I'm the creator of timingresearch.com, and today we will be discussing your trade ideas. So over the last few days, about 30 people submitted up to five symbols each, and I put the list together of the symbols we're going to talk about today. I'm going to paste that in the chat thing right now. And so we are recording this at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and today I have arranged for Neil Batho and Jim Kenny to be here, and Jim will be moderating, so I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to him.
Okay, thanks a lot, David, and great to have Neil back here to go through some of these stocks. As you can see from the screen there, the Dow Jones did roll over today down about 115, and the NASDAQ rolled over just barely at minus 122. Just a quick thought that we've been sharing with people, the SPY short interest had collapsed in the last couple of months of the year, indicating actually going to the lowest level since October of 2018. And so that means, you know, some of the short covering that had us going higher might have dried up a bit. So it'll be interesting to see if this 3260 number on S&P holds up for a while and if we can actually get through it. Today, we're going to go through 15 stocks that you guys have put forward. And with us today, Neil Batho's is going to give us some input on what he thinks of these stocks. Before we get started, Neil, the newcomers that aren't aware, a little background on yourself and what's going on at your company.
Sure. Thanks for having me on the show. I've been doing a newsletter for quite some time. I want to figure in the Evo Cloud, and I send out alerts to my client, a broker, $98.99, and it's really just a sales job. They sent us out for a training and said, you're not financial advisors, you're financial counselor. And I thought, oh my God, I don't want to be a counselor. I got to get out of this way. But it was hard to leave. The mutual fund lunch is so great that they brought in all the time, and I was right out of college, so I hung around for a year anyway, and so now I write my newsletter.
And basically today, we're going to get a little bit of input on you from you on these 15 different stocks, but also at the end of the broadcast, you're going to let people know how to get a hold of you so they can learn a little bit more about what you're bringing to the table for the investors. Right off the bat, we're going to go out over one that, you know, off air, we were talking about that you had been pretty darn bullish on, and certainly that has come to pass. This is AMD. Closed today down about 10 cents. It's obviously had a huge advance. The 52-week low is 18 and change. The 52-week high is 49 and change. So quite a year. And this is a company that does huge volume, 54 million shares and change here today. So how are you looking forward from this level, Nick?
There's no chance whatsoever. I mean, this stock was below $10 a few years ago. You had the last 3 years to buy it. So there's just no point at all. I mean, they got an Apple contract a couple years ago. And basically the number two chip for desktop and laptop computers. And no, it's gone 2 to 40, twice four in the last 20 years. And yeah, maybe it'll go from here to 100, but the fact that someone's looking at it now means you're way too late. And if you want to make money in the market, you got to be on top of it all the time. So there's just no chance. I would never buy it here.
Hey yeah. Jim, you got to scroll down so people can see. Oh, okay. Can actually see the chart.
Okay, I'm not seeing the screen, so I don't know. Is that better?
Yeah.
Like that? I'm not 100% sure how it's showing up. Can you see that pretty good?
Yeah, that looks good now.
Okay. So when I get the new one up, we'll bring the screen down to this level, and then I'll know it'll be working well. Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, if you can see the screen there, you can certainly see the stuff has gone from last December down in the under 20 area, and you can see what kind of an advance. And that's a pretty big parabolic move in the last, 3 or 4 months. So the P ratio on the screen is showing 249:1 P ratio, Neil. That's a pretty heavy one, isn't it?
I don't look at PEs so much on these types of things. You never know. A PE that high can cut in half in that quarter.
It's one. Yeah, time. It's a way of trying to figure out valuation. You don't buy this company on valuation. You buy it on some kind of a tremendous growth in revenue that they probably will have.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, you can do a PE on Hobo, Pfizer. Yeah. But it's hard to do PEs on semiconductor stocks.
Yeah, and it also tells you, though, that if the faucet is turned off on these stocks at any point, there's not a whole lot behind them.
Yeah, true.
You know, and that's obviously similar to biotech, which is why really comes down to live by the sword, die by the sword. These semis have been on fire. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes fires can go out. Let's go to a stock that you know, used to be the big blue, as they say, and now it is a little less so. But it's, you know, IBM, 134.14, up a little bit today, kind of smack in the middle of its 52-week range, 119 and 152. 134 puts it smack in the middle. Been going kind of sideways.
Yeah. Don't bother. The reason this is on the list is because it's one of the dogs out for next year.
Yeah.
But something can't keep pace with a market like this for several months. I mean, what kind of strength could it possibly have?
Yeah.
You know, the relative strength of IBM. I don't have to look up a relative strength chart. I already know it's going to be really weak. And in the market, the strong get stronger and the weak get weaker. So that's why you got to go with what works. And that's kind of why, in a lot of ways, you know, I'm not saying buy the S&P 500, but the only reason the S&P 500 works is because that index has changed every year. And the strong get stronger, which means their market cap gets so much bigger. You have a stock like Apple that did so well last year, moves the whole index. I think, you know, S&P 500 is up 30%, but that's because Apple is strong, get stronger.
Right.
You know, so in a big bull market, you never want to buy weakness. It'll just get crushed.
Yeah. And tech and biotech and stuff like that have been pretty much where the beta has been coming from, right?
The volatility.
Yeah.
The
alpha. All right. Well, so anyway, your opinion, I mean, getting to the point here, your opinion on IBM is stay away. Nothing there. Not exciting on the up or down side.
No, there's other software consulting companies.
Yeah. All right. The next one up here is going to be Canopy. So we're getting into the pot situation. Let's get the chart where everybody can see it. And
what is the ticker?
Oh, shit. Hold on. Oh, shoot. Okay. Oh, boy. Hold on. Oh.
Is it weed?
Yeah, it's weed.
Okay.
I tell you, I live in Nevada, and there's two huge canopy stores. One is Planet 13, I think it's called, and the other one is called Reef or something. And they're like warehouses. They're huge, you know. And they got strobe lights outside and everything. So, you know, where it's legal, you know, there seems to be some action in this business. But what do you think of canopy growth?
That sounds like a real contrarian indicator to me.
I hear what you're saying. You're saying it might be mature. Yeah.
I'm guessing that went right shortly after the stock started moving down.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at it and yeah, you might have a chance sort of like breaking out at the mid-20s up to about 43, but it's not really my specialty on that industry. I think in a lot of ways it's more of a fad and all these people will buy their weed at the store for a couple of years and then they'll just give up on it.
Yeah. The what do you call it? The volume had a big spike at the end of November and then it's died down a little bit. So I don't know if that spike in volume is anything to be concerned about, but when it broke under 15, there seemed to be quite a big spike in volume. So I don't know if that was a lot of people coming back into the stock. And it has been moving a little bit away from 15. But certainly if it got above 25 and 30, it would certainly be off to the races again, it looks like. Huh?
Yeah, it looks like an okay speculative right here. Yeah.
Yeah. But as a sector, you're not too keen on it as far as you think it's more transitory than the beginning of something big.
Yeah, I think it's sort of buy the rumors, sell the news. I mean, all the money be made in these stocks a couple years ago. It reminds me a little bit internet stocks too, and then, you know, then now it's sort of what you would call it, normalizing, I guess.
And even the electric you know, the electric car thing still seems to have some legs as far as people's thinking of the future. But anyway, one of the big markets lately, because of the price of crude spiking up a bit, that has caught a bit of a bid is the oil area. Well, more of the oil exploration. But these big companies like Exxon, they've caught a little bit of a bid. How do you feel about Exxon? It's $70.18 here today.
Yeah, we're actually long Exxon, the only oil stock that we have, mainly because I think there's going to be some value that funds are going to pick up this year, and it has a 5% yield, which is the best in, I think, 25 years. So Exxon's got a history of doubling its dividend every 10 years. So, you know, you put 100 grand in now, you make 5 grand a year, but in 10 years, maybe you'll make 10%, 10 grand a year if we still have the same oil demand. And don't kid yourself, people are still using more oil every year than the year before. So.
What kind of a target price do you have on this thing? The lows have been around 66. We're currently only about $4 off the low. So what kind of a target are you looking for here, near term and longer term?
I'm just bringing that up. I had it in my head, but I just have to double check it.
The 52-week high is 83.
Yeah. Yeah, I would probably just hang out and collect the dividend until about, well, actually, you know, I'm just going to monitor it as we go and then just be collecting the dividend along the way. But, you know, I think we could get a move. I have to switch to the weekly chart just a sec to get a good objective. I think it was 90 from what I remember. Yeah, about 90. That's where that breakdown was a couple years ago.
So on a longer term basis, going up towards that level, and that would correspond maybe to the oil prices, you know, maybe getting away from people if it started breaking 75 or 75. Because this is the kind of company that would probably need a spike up in oil to get going, don't you think?
I think so. Oil is traded in New York. I mean, yeah, I expect oil to be at $80 by the summer, and everyone's going to say, I don't understand why oil is so high. Aren't we? And I'll say, oh yeah, solar panels are made out of oil. You know, what do you think? So you got to dig up lithium with oil, so and all that sort of thing. So yeah, not going to get oil anytime soon. You think all those mopeds in the third world are not going to be electric?
That's right.
Of course,
that's
unless you have some nut jobs from the West that are going to give away all our money to these countries that won't use it for mopeds but build palaces for themselves anyway.
Right. So overall, you're pretty optimistic on the future of Exxon.
Not really. Just taking it as it comes. Yeah, a week at a time.
Yeah, in other words, rather than doing a big forecast on it, you're playing it one day at a time. If it keeps making new highs or keeps matriculating up, you stick with it. If for whatever reason it goes the other way, you cut and run.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. So here we're talking about a little bit of a pharmaceutical here with Pfizer, PFE. Yeah. $38. Everyone's been trying to, you know, get people to buy into this Pfizer for a while. It seems to be one of the dogs of the Dow, something like that, right? And, you know, pays almost 4%. That ain't bad. 13 PE doesn't sound like it's too rich, but it seems to have had a heck of a time moving anywhere, even though healthcare and biotech have been on a pretty good run in the end of the year, right?
Yeah, I get a feeling that a lot of these picks are people looking for value, but you got to be careful here. This is one of the most bizarre charts I've ever seen, and it rallied kind of up to where the breakdown was last year. And there's an expression in trading that ceilings become floors and floors become ceilings. Yeah. So that was the floor. Now it's the ceiling. So
right around that 40 buck area,
huh?
Right around that $40 area.
Yeah, I would not buy it here now.
Yeah. There's a little bit of a gap I see there on a big high volume sell off back in August, early August.
I wouldn't buy it at all. I would wait until biotech sells off more and go buy it. These are just weak. I don't think these big drug stock names are going to do anything.
It almost looks like the IBM of the drug of the healthcare area. In other words, IBM has gone basically sideways during a big advance in the stock market. This thing here has gone, you know, just up a little bit, even though there's a major advance in the sector. And,
okay, I'm looking a little closer here. I'm looking at the monthly chart.
Sure.
And monthly chart can tell you a lot.
Sure.
So if you're looking at a monthly play, there'd be a real good breakout at about 40. And if you want to do that, then I think it looks okay.
Yeah. But if it has the ability to close that gap between 42 and 40, that might be telling you that there's something happening, huh?
Yeah. So, well, just looking at the monthly chart slows everything down so much.
Yeah.
But if you want to buy at 40, but I mean, you got to have a holding objective of like at least 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
And
no.
You'll get 50% out of it. So that's about
No question that Pfizer is generally a fairly slow-moving vehicle. But again, people are buying it, like you say, they're looking for value and they're looking for the dividend. And if you're looking for those two things, it's not a terrible thing to look at, right? This next one certainly had a lot more action than the others, Lulu, but it seems to have had a very large move. The key is this thing going to keep going, or has this thing kind of petered out a little bit? It's gone from 129 up to 236, so that's pretty close to getting to be a double. You see anything on Lulu?
Hey, Neil, are you still there? Okay. I guess he's having some kind of technical issues.
All right. Well, I could give a little bit of an input on what it looks like. Obviously, everybody can see that it has had a big run-up from the 120 area ballpark all the way up to the 240 area ballpark. And so that's a big advance. This is a company that obviously is in a... Let's just take a look under the hood and see what it looks like technically here. Clothing, obviously, retail. And again, after Christmas and all that, you had pretty good volume going into this thing at the end of the year. And right now, the market's trading about $43 above its 200-day average. 215 is the 50-day. So again, the market's in an uptrend here, basis these moving averages. And the company obviously has been making some good money, and their earnings reports have been received well. So you know, it looks like an all systems kind of go with Lulu. But again, it is a bit overbought, and a pullback with the S&P may also coincide with a pullback on this. So better entry levels could be 215 and 200 area if you got that kind of a pullback. Today's volume was a little bit on the light side. You can see down here the average volume is a couple of million shares a day on a 50-day basis and 200-day basis, and today it only traded about 1.3. So the volume is drying up a little bit up here, and so we'll have to see if this thing can maintain this this area around 230. And again, the general market, if it goes to new highs, this will probably be on the board. If the general market does have a correction because of the overbought condition, then again, Lulu might pull back as well. And there could be a better entry level on a pullback towards those moving averages. Next one up is Verizon, which again, another one that with the 5G phenomenon that everyone's talking about may be something people want to look into. But that has already rolled over a little bit here. We'll take a look. I'll bring the screen up a little bit here. And you can see that it's been pretty stable, 52.62, because it's pretty much a dividend yielding kind of company. Not unlike Pfizer or some of the other ones, where you're getting a P ratio that's very, very reasonable, and you're getting a yield that's very reasonable. And again, people are thinking a lot of good activity with this year. But again, there has been a bit of a rollover in the last month or so, 2-3 weeks anyway. And you can see the 62 top right now is starting to get further away from it. And you can see this area down here around 58, where these were highs here, and these are lows down here. I would say the 58 area looks like an important area to hold on any pullback. And again, the volume on this huge 13 million shares and change traded today. The moving averages are more than likely still trending upward, so that's good. But I would say this area here that is the highs of last June, July, and the lows of late in the year in Q4, right around the 58. I think this is an important area for the stock to hold if you're bullish on it. And again, while you're watching the thing vacillate back and forth, it looks like a 4.13%. dividend. So pretty much that's why people are also picking it up as well. Next one up here on the list is going to be ENV, and let's take a look at ENV.
Hey, Neil, are you back now?
I had some technical difficulties. Is it working again?
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay.
I just went over Verizon, VZ. Do you want to put a little intake on that?
Yeah, just a second.
Also, one of the more volatile stocks that might be up your alley more, which is Lululemon.
Does anyone here have a Verizon phone? I'm wondering if they still use CDMA.
Not sure.
But I mean, the only logical trade on Verizon would be to buy that breakout at 65, you know, spread double. Wait, that's the month I'm looking at. But if I look at the monthly chart, it'd be a spread double top. Oh my God, that's going back to 1997. Holy cow. Okay, just a second here. Yeah, no, definitely don't buy it now. These pullbacks are kind of weak. So I would wait until a breakout of around 62 if you want to get into this stock. But telecoms, I mean, it's an old story. And people are talking about, you know, you're going to make millions on 5G. And I don't think you're going to make millions on Verizon on 5G. That's for sure. The company's already massive. So.
All right, what about LULU, which is a little bit more up your alley because there's a lot of volatility to it and there's been a lot of activity on it. Do you see anything there? Although it's a bit expensive, you tend to not want to gravitate towards the $230 stocks, right?
No, I'm really not into this company. So I'm just no comment.
Yeah. All right, well, let's switch over to the next one I got up here, which is ENV, which is Envestnet. And this is another one that obviously is on the bicycle, but it's up in the higher area of where it's been trading this last 52 weeks. And
it sure has a strange chart coming down from the 70s to the 50s like that.
Yeah.
And then it right has back up. You're doing that many times. So yeah, I mean, a lot of times, and I mean, obviously, again, once again, that breakout would be a spread triple top. So that's definitely what I'd be going at around 74, 75, if you want to get in here.
Yeah.
Do you have the market cap for that, Jim?
I just had it on the screen. It's a software company, obviously, and market cap is $3.78 billion, so it's not tiny. But it is losing money, but that sometimes doesn't matter to people.
Yeah, I'm just not familiar with this company, so I'm guessing the person who put it on the list is, or maybe they work there, I don't know. But, I mean, I sometimes use market cap price objectives instead of price objectives. So if you love the company and you think it has a way to go, something that's at $3 billion could go to $30
billion. Yeah.
You know, and so you got to have that in mind. I use market cap objectives all the time.
Okay.
So,
and yeah. The momentum on this stock obviously has turned to the upside, maybe in the short term stalled out a little bit. But if you're looking at it over the last few months, certainly it's definitely caught a bid for some reason.
You could get crushed on this stock if you try to buy before the breakout, because that's one of the biggest failures of all time, is when it's almost about to break out, you're going to fail. So, yeah, definitely wouldn't buy now. I'd wait to see what happens, or even wait till, you know, 76 or something like that.
And the short interest, 474 now, it could have been as high, it could have been much higher during this advance. So for all you know, there's a big short covering squeeze going on. And if that's over, then obviously it's hard to get it to 80 or 90 if the buyers were forced to buy it, you know?
Yeah.
Well, the next one, TWLO, let's take a look and see what's going on there. And this one's been all over the place this year as well.
Yeah, this is the one that competes with Zillow, I guess. No, I don't like it at all. It had a great trend. I mean, if you're looking at a stock like this, you got to think to yourself, where were you at $35?
Yeah.
And if you weren't buying at $35, it means you're just not on top of it enough. So
it's somewhat similar to the other company that was just mentioned. You know, $14 billion market cap at losing money, big short interest, 15%. So I think maybe if somebody put it on the list, what they're hoping for is that there's, like you saw on that last company, a little bit, and maybe get some action here, because you know, the low in 90 and then the rally back towards 110 and then back down to 95, and now it's, you know, traded as high as almost 110 today. I think maybe somebody's hoping or thinking that it could start accelerating to the upside, maybe on a squeeze or something like that.
One of the biggest mistakes people make in trading is trying to buy these buy weakness and in, you know, try to buy these dips and go for these little bounces. I mean, you make money in trading by trading the big trends. Mm-hmm. So this big trend is over, and it did break through the cloud a little bit. You might get a move up to 110, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Sorry, 130, mm-hmm, if you're lucky. But no, I don't like it, and I'm not sure what's going to happen with the housing market either. It'll probably just sort of hum along sideways, do a little bit up, is my guess.
Well, here's one you're definitely interested in, so let's talk more about it. And it has definitely caught a bid here in the last 60 days after a big correction. It had a big run, then a correction, and now it's back on the bicycle a little bit. This is GLD. So why don't you give a little bit of an idea on what your feeling is on GLD and maybe some ways that you are playing it. Yeah,
yeah, we're long gold. For the first time, I'm bullish on gold in about 9 years. So yeah, I like it, even though there was some stuff happening overseas and people think gold went up because of that. It's probably true, but my objective on gold for the summer is 2,000 an ounce, so we're still quite a ways from there, and not sure what long-term objective is after that. But you know, usually gold will buy you a really nice suit in New York is the best barometer for it. So call up some nice places in New York, see what a nice suit, shirt, tie, and shoes will cost you, and that's the fair value of gold. But I think it's going to hit 2,000 by summer, so yeah, gold is okay. Silver is a little bit behind, but silver will probably get you more in the next 6 to 12 months.
Do you like using the ETFs on gold and silver, or do you like to hit the mining shares?
Normally, when something like this happens, the metal will move first, and you're usually okay with the metal, but we're using the triple leveraged ETF on gold right now.
And that's anything with the silver? Is there a triple leveraged ETF on the silver as well?
Yep, there is. The gold is UGLD, and I believe the silver one is USLV. I'm not sure, but I would wait just a tiny bit on silver just to see. It always moves the same direction as gold, but it seems to lag sometimes by quite a bit, because as these precious metal markets start moving, people start off with gold, then they say, oh, okay, it's real. Maybe I'll go for the silver now.
Yeah, I have a technical question. You know, when the markets break out, Sometimes they come back and test the breakout point. Yeah. Breakout point on gold, in my view, was around 15. The first one was 1350, and it went back down to 14 and change. So it didn't get all the way back down to the breakout point, but it certainly took a big drop from the 1580 where it peaked out at. Do you think it's possible on a short-term basis that the gold and silver could pull back to their breakout points recently, which would be maybe 1530 on gold and maybe 1750 on the silver before they go back up? Or do you think, how do you feel about any kind of a better entry level than where we are now?
What I find with that is you got to have a breakout of like about 3% or so. And then it comes back just to where it broke out. If it breaks out by a little bit, it doesn't work. So for that to work, it's going to have to go up to about 1600 and then back to maybe 1575, and then you should be okay. But from here, I don't think there's going to be a pullback. I think you got to get in right now.
Yeah, there's too much underpinning it, and it's still probably a underinvested sector, don't you think?
Definitely. I mean, here's something for everyone listening. If you want to know whether or not you should buy a pick, tell the pick you want to buy or the sector to all of your coworkers at your office, and tell them right now, hey man, I'm thinking about buying gold, and they will laugh in your face. That's when you buy gold, and in 6 months you're going to be the one who's laughing.
Yeah, because if you get with the kind of money that's being printed and the kind of money that has been put into this, the value of this stock market, if you ever had a situation where really people did put the 5 or 10% of their portfolio into this thing, I think the market would have quite a bit.
I would put way more than 5 to 10% of a portfolio in this. If I was a guy that didn't watch the market yet, I'd feel comfortable putting 100% of my money in gold right now.
Yeah, I'm just saying the general, people who are working with modern portfolio theory of diversified assets, where you put some into all this kind of stuff. I don't think the percentage that people have in gold is anywhere near what it could be. If people really started to say, based on the printing of money, based on the deficits of the government going nuts, based on the geopolitical, I think, and the central banks printing all this money and putting their interest rates under zero, I think it is wise to put, and just being very conservative, just saying 5 or 10%, which guys like Ray Dalio, I think, are even, thinking is a reasonable, even more, and this guy's not just some crazy riverboat gambler, or speculator. He's managing a big amount of money, and so it's the more mainstream this thing could get with all investors, obviously that could catch a very big bid and make for that 2000 price that you're hoping for and beyond.
My hypothesis is that gold goes up when deficits get bigger, and so you can have a massive deficit, but if it stays the same, gold's not going to go anywhere. But if that deficit goes from like 800 billion to 1.2 trillion, something like that, and I just read the news a few weeks ago, and we mentioned this on the show yesterday, that the deficit, I think it was 2 months ago, is 12% bigger than the year before. Yeah. And that's all I need to buy gold. It's all I need. If it's growing, how much more is it going to grow? Is it ever going to get under control? So
no. And if the Fed is willing to inject $400 billion of liquidity since September, how much would they be willing to inject if prices started to roll over in stocks?
Yeah.
So then you got a situation where, people are going to look at the currency and they may say to themselves, this stuff is being printed pretty heavily.
Basically, my long-term objective here is if Trump gets reelected, stocks could rally for about 3 more years, and about a year before the next election, just get out. Just get out. And if houses are cheaper then or something, take out a home equity loan, buy another house, rent it out to some college students, and you're probably going to be set life.
If you look backward, 2000, 2001 was a rough racket, got a new president. After 4 years, things were, going fairly well. And then he got another term. And then at the end of his second term is where it hit the fan. Clinton's at the end of his second term is when it hit the fan. And then, so that would really correspond to that concept of after we have one more term of Trump, then the risk could be elevated to where, they have to give back some of these gains that they've had.
The risk is going to be so high. Yeah. The best years of the presidential cycles, and we also mentioned this yesterday, is when there's a new president, the third year is the best year of the market. Mm-hmm. And if the incumbent incumbent is running for re-election. Then the fourth year is also good, but volatile. And I actually forget about the rest of if the incumbent gets re-elected or not. But the year last year was statistically the best of all presidential cycles. So this year, it's on averaging 10% in history.
And even if you go back to, if you went back to Reagan, you know, his first 4 years went okay. Second 4 years, you had the acceleration. And then in 87, yeah. which is 1 year before he got out, we had all kinds of problems there. So I think there is some history to what you're talking about. Whether it repeats itself is unknown. But
yeah. And I mean, if the stock market keeps going up, you're going to have a lot of these left wingers out there just licking their chops, wanting to steal everyone's money in a couple of years.
Yeah.
You know,
they'll increase the estate tax and the capital gains tax. They'll go up to 80%, right?
You know, I mean, they're just going to be licking their chops. And then,
I just think of another four years of the income disparity getting more and more and more and more and more. In other words, people who are in stocks, we love it. But if you looked at 100% of the citizens, what percentage of the citizens are really making out? And then, of course, if the majority of the citizens are not benefiting from something, that's when obviously some resentment could enter into the picture.
Yeah, I'm a big Ron Paul guy from back in the day, you know, 10 years ago or so. And one of the things that Ron Paul said, which was so spot on accurate that nobody gets in the whole world, is that inflation hurts poor people the most. Mm-hmm. You know, so all this money printing, all loans are new money that increase money supply. And I track the money supply.
Right.
If you go to the website TradingView and you just type in M2, you're going to see the money supply triple over the last 15 years. And when you deficit spend and you're pumping the money in the market and all the rich people are getting richer, well, that's why they're getting richer, because, I mean, the market goes up usually a bit more than inflation, you know, and housing keeps pace with inflation. But if you don't have money to buy a house, if you don't have money to put in the market, if all you're doing is working a job and paying rent and buying food, you're screwed, you know? And so really the solution is to just balance the budget. Don't have inflation. Don't deficit spend and the poor will be fine. Right. But that never seems to be the solution, because nobody understands how the money supply and inflation works. So then you know, anyway, that's really the big thing here. Inflation hurts the poor. That's why people are poor. I mean, I remember 20 years ago, mortgage rates were 8% on a house, and the budget was balanced even for a couple of years. You remember that?
Right.
And the government didn't know what to do with the money, and they started buying back their own bonds. And, you know, people could buy houses for really cheap. And now those same exact houses, 20 years later, double, triple the price. And I'm pretty sure, I remember average, maybe a college graduate starting wage 20 years ago was around, you know, 30 grand, 33 grand. But I'm pretty sure it's not 100 grand today.
Right.
Keep pace with inflation. So if it was, that'd be okay, but it's certainly not. So.
All right. Well, let's hit a couple more here. We got Xilinx, which is obviously a stock that got hit very hard this year, went down to 90 from 140. But now it seems to be trying to get back on the bicycle. Today it had a pretty good day, up 2.28%. Is this something that's going to be able to start taking off, you think? Or what do you think?
I'm just bringing it up now. And this is a stock I forgot about. I forgot it was still around. I know it's semis, but it's a different type of semis.
Yeah.
Do you know what it is, Jim?
I'm not an expert on this, but I do know that I've heard it spoken about in constructive terms in the last couple of months, and it has moved up a bit, but it needs to get through this 100-110 area to become a superstar.
That big blast off to 130, if you have a pullback of more than 20%, you're in deep trouble. So up from 130 down to 90, you can almost just forget it. I wouldn't even bother. Relative strength is just destroyed. So,
and the only other thing is, it's in an industry that can go crazy one way or the other. So, I mean, that would be the only saving grace, that this type of volatility can happen in that sector. You know what I mean? But it's happened while the rest of the sector has gone nuts on the upside. So, obviously, that's what you're saying. If your sector is going nuts and you're 4 miles behind it, that might not be a good thing, right?
I mean, I just know what I see from the technicals, but it's not a normal semiconductor. I'm not exactly sure what it is. So you'd have to be a real expert in that industry, and I'm not.
Zayo, Z-A-Y-O. Let's see what that's all about. Zayo Group Holdings.
I do not know what this is.
Well, we will find out, because I'll hit a couple of buttons and find out more about it. But what we can say is that sometime in April and May, people got onto this thing, and it's been kind of flatlining since, but it had a big move from there to then. Let's take a look at the industry group and take a look at other information on it. Okay, it's a networking company. So I don't know if it's kind of like Cisco Systems. systems or not, but it's $8 billion market cap. It's got a short interest of about 6-7%. And
what about the volume? Maybe small volume, huh?
Well, the volume today was 4 million and change, and the average volume lately has been about 2.6 million. Longer term, it's about 3.8. So the volume today was like quite good.
Very strange chart. Unless they got new management in 2019, that's what I'm guessing probably happened.
The late, I'm looking at the graph going back a couple of years. The area around 35 looked like it was some former lows, and it looks like that's where it broke from. So I don't think it's coincidental that it's having trouble or stalling out here at 35.
You know, like there's a saying in trading: if you think you're gambling, you probably are.
This next one was promoted pretty heavily by this guy. I forget his name, but you know, it was his number one pick, and he thought it was a great future. It was down the 15 area. So far, this gentleman's name, he's been pretty accurate on this one, as STM has, you know, been very steady to the upside here. And you know, I guess is it a chip or something that has to go into a lot of different important computer situations.
Wow, this sure moved.
Yeah, are you familiar with this company or not really?
No, I'm not. I think I'm going to look at it a bit more now. It looks like a nice chart.
Yeah,
a little similar to the oil chart, to be honest.
Yeah, but if you look behind the curtain on it, I think they have some kind of a component that's necessary in a very important, you know, device. I don't know if it's a payment situation or something, but
and the
I know.
Cap.
Yeah, and what do you call it? This was kind of promoted by a Stockaker guy. I can't remember his name, but he had some kind of a history of being decent sometimes. It's $23 billion, so it's no tiny guy.
Oh.
And basically, it cleared last year's highs of 25. So we'll have to see if it can hold water here. Moving averages are down at 19, so it's getting a little bit extended technically on the moving average basis, but like you say, when they want to run, they could care less what the moving averages are.
Yeah, I mean, if you, a lot of things on a stock like this, you should have been in at around 20 if you really liked it.
Yeah,
you know, so you got to think to yourself, if you're wondering if you should get it in now and you were watching it back then, you should have got in back then. And it's funny, you know, I saw a study, you know, there's a study on everything, right? But it said that people who second guess themselves make worse decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So if you were watching this at 20 and you were thinking about buying, you probably should have bought it. So, but here you might stand a chance. I mean, up to 40. But remember that 80% of stocks follow the market. So if the market starts going down, you know, I mean, you always got to follow the market. So you don't know if the market's going to sell off a bit here, if this is going to keep moving.
Yeah, I heard a lyric out of a song that says, "Have mercy on the man who doubts what he's sure of."
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one.
And that's pretty much what you're talking about. You know, your first instinct probably is the right one. The one that is in your gut is probably the right one, and if you second guess it long enough, it'll be a bad decision.
Tell your son when he goes to a high school dance and he sees the girl he likes standing by herself, he better ask her to dance right away. If he doesn't, someone else will.
All right, here's a stock you've never heard of here. Microsoft. How are we feeling about Microsoft?
So it makes little soft things. Okay.
Yeah. This reminds me a little bit of the old line, bad-mouthing. Microsoft is like bad-mouthing Santa Claus. It just keeps giving gifts. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Did it reach $1 trillion market cap yet? I think it might have, huh?
I think so.
Really, really close to Apple now.
Yeah, it's 1.2 trillion.
Oh, is it? Apple was also 1.2 trillion. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't know. I mean, it's the biggest company in the world now, or very close to Apple anyway. I just don't know. I do look on the daily chart that the RSI moved from above 70 to below 70.
Mm-hmm.
So even the MACD moved down. So you could take a breather here. You're not going to miss out on anything, that's for sure.
Yeah, it looks like 150, 140 would be the two numbers if there was a sharp pullback, that there'd probably be a lot of bidding going for it.
I don't like these big blasts off. It really reminds me of 99. Yeah.
I think the other thing is if you look at the bottom of the chart here where the volume is, at the end of December, it looked like there was a heck of a lot of panic to get into this thing, which would either tell me, short covering or maybe some buybacks that had to be done by the company before the end of the year. But there's a volume spike there that is quite big. Sometimes you'll get a big volume spike and then there'll be a opposite direction with a lower volume, right?
I don't know, Jim. That's that sounds like...
I just noticed that.
You're gonna have to type that out for me.
But anyway, your opinion on Microsoft, which people are dying to hear, Neil, your opinion is basically that it's a great company, but you may want to wait for a pullback to enter.
There you go.
All right, let's hit the last one here and see what's going on here. CTSH. And that is Cognizant Technology Solutions. And that company is on the defensive here today and has been on the defensive since it hit 74 back in the first quarter of 2019.
Yeah.
So people are probably trying to figure out, you know, who'll stop the rain.
You could form a triangle pattern with this. If you go back about 6 months and you can do an arrow going down and then from the lows, an arrow going up, and then it'll be at this little narrow range. And if it breaks out of that triangle to like 63.4, you'll get a move, but only up to 69, which is where that floor was, where the floor becomes the ceiling. A quick note here, if there is going to be a market crash, you know, and stocks could go down 10% easy because the valuations are so high. We're at the top of the 100-year range on the S&P 500 PE. So if we do get a big crash, and then once the rebound starts, the rebound will not be in weak stocks like this. The rebound will be once again in the strong stocks, Facebook, Google, Apple, Microsoft, these types of things. So if you're trying to look for deals in the market right now, the relative strength, I mean, you can just look at it and you know the relative strength is weak. And these things that get weaker, they're not going to get picked up.
Now, as far as a quick overview on what you were thinking generally is the metals seem to be that, you know, you should have some exposure in there and the time to be exposed is here. But the rest of the board, you're thinking a little bit that a correction in Q1 is probably going to happen and to have powder dry to take advantage of lower prices if that correction occurs?
Yeah, that's true. Or I would just put 70% of my money in gold, 30% in silver, and I wouldn't even look at the computer for 6 months. And you're probably going to be 90% of all hedge funds.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding.
Hey, listen, Tudor Jones is on file saying he thought it was going to be the best investment for the next year or two. And he said that down at 1400. So, you know, not that he's always right, but he's certainly not a dummy. And
He was in the original market wizards from the 80s.
And, you know, like I say, he still has some respect to him. And, you know, like I say, the proof's in the pudding. The thing had a big breakout last year. It had a big pullback. It held the pullback. And now it's on the bicycle again. So in a bull market, you know, you're supposed to buy the dips. And you had the dip to 1440 or something. Yeah. And those who bought the dip now, you know, have blue chips in front of them.
First time in 9 years to be long-term bullish on gold. That's a heck of a long time to wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, and, so...
But, you know, the stage is set because the participation level of the general public is not that great. The fundamentals of printing money, running deficits, and, I mean, the Fed is dying to get inflation back, and the dollar is certainly getting queasy. And if it were to break under certain levels, it could accelerate to the downside for all you know. And so the reasons why it's going up, you know, and if inflation were to come back, the interest rates are so low. When I first started in this thing decades ago, inflation ran at 10% and the interest rates were at 3 or 4. And that was the environment where they had to raise interest rates up to 16% on the long bond just to get inflation back down again. So, you know,
so this was like mid to late 70s?
Yeah, well, at the end of the 70s, early 80s, where Volcker had to come in there and he had to, and the bond market collapsed. I mean, you know, I don't know, you know, obviously, like you say, it takes 9 years for a cycle to sometimes come back. But, you know, if going from 16% interest rates down to 1% is not the end of the cycle, what is, right? And so
that was right around when the U.S. officially closed the gold window, huh?
And if you just use common sense as your guide, what is the most explosive area? And that is the issuance of debt. And so the amount of debt in this bubble now is enormous. And the people who, if you tell them inflation may come back, they are absolutely adamant that it's never coming back. So you really have unanimity of opinion that issuing debt and buying debt down here at these ridiculous yields is safe. And then you have people saying that the big risk to that debt, which would be inflation picking up, is impossible to occur almost. And I think that sets the stage for exactly those two things to occur. A situation where people try to bail out of debt and there's no liquidity, and a situation where inflation picks up much greater than people think.
Yeah, it's pretty sketchy time, because all these people that are running all these things don't even understand, you know, you just can't print money into prosperity. And without a doubt, the rich are going to get richer and the poor are going to get poorer, simply not because CEOs are getting paid more. I couldn't care if a CEO makes $500 million a year. It's because they're printing the money
to get it.
You know, right. CEO is not going in and stealing money from poor people for his salary. He's making money off the stock, you know, that goes up, right? And you get rid of all the rich people, take their money away, it's not going to do a darn thing at all. You know, so this printing money and the middle class is shrinking, but you got to be really astute and you got to know what you're up to and you got to follow the markets properly. And now, in my opinion, best place is in gold. And in the long term, if you can get one or two rental houses under your belt and leverage, you know, the housing as much as you can and have the rent pay the mortgage, make sure you can get renters in there, you're going to be set for life, you know?
Yeah, it's not a bad plan.
Keep pace with inflation, you know?
Yeah. All right, well, we're coming to the top of the hour, Neil. So again, some of your views obviously have come across in the last hour, but for people to get behind the curtain and really get in touch with you and find out what you bring to the table day in and day out, how do they do that?
You can go to traderreview.net, sign up for my newsletter. I give you one of the best ETFs I think you can hold for the next 10 years. In the best fundamental sector. And then you can get my free newsletter. And if you like what I say, you can join my private client list. That's where I send you all the real picks.
All right. That sounds like a deal. Again, I'm Jim Kenney. If you'd like to get on to my weekly update that I send out each and every week, just simply go to optionprofessor@gmail.com and we'll get that out to you. Right now, I'm going to turn it back over to David Kosminer. And thanks a lot, Neil, for showing up here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks, guys. Great presentation. And thank you for everyone watching, dealing with some of our tech issues today. So just a quick reminder to everyone, be sure to subscribe to Timing Research on YouTube and your favorite podcast network. Also, let's see, this coming Saturday, Anka Metcalf and I are doing another one of our Synergy Trader events. So we have 6 presentations this time. Harry Boxer, Price Healy, Mark Sachs, Andrew Keen, Jim Kenney, and Anka Metcalf will all be giving presentations. And then also next Monday, the next episode of Crowd Forecast News, Jim will be back to moderate it again, and Jake Bernstein, Anka Metcalf, and Matt Buckley will be on that one. And then the next Tuesday, the next episode of this show will be Jim and Harry Boxer. So great lineup coming up for the next week or over the next week. And if you want to go to timingresearch.com/live, you can get access to the live events always on that page. So just want to thank my guests again for today, Neil Batho of traderreview.net and Jim Kenney of optionprofessor.com. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.